Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
You should have a fear factor. You should be driven to fight for your livelihood and your contract. And that hunger and desire and that competing element makes you better.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
You're now listening to the Coaches Network, a podcast aiming to bring people at the heart of coach and player development together. My name is Coach Yas, a UEFA A licensed, FA Advanced Youth Award, and FA Goalkeeper B licensed coach. With over 10 years of experience working in youth football from grassroots right through to Premier League academies, I'm currently operating as an affiliate tutor for the FA alongside working towards a master's in performance football coaching. Today I'm going to be joined by my co-host and the Coaches Network analysis specialist, Coach Ben. Ben is a UEFA A licensed coach who holds an FA Youth Award and a Master's in Sports Coaching with 10 years of experience including working across the male and female youth development pathways alongside a vast experience on individual, player and team performance analysis. And as part of our Insight series, we'll be joined by a range of individuals working across multiple disciplines within the coaching world in order to explore their journeys and dig deeper into their experiences so that we can leave you with some golden nuggets to help you reach your full potential.
Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. I'm Coach Yas, and today I've got a very special guest with me. I've got a former professional footballer and currently working at loans as a loans manager in the professional development phase at Leicester City. I've got Guy Branston. Good morning, Guy. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. Look, Guy, I'm not going to waste any time. I want to get straight into the heart of it. Currently working as a loans manager at Leicester City, but obviously your career started off as a player. Why don't you take us back to that journey and let us know where that all started, and hopefully we'll get back to today.
Well, we'll be here quite a while because I had a long career as a bit of a loans man myself. I started at Leicester as a kid, came through the academy, was offered schoolboys and now scholarship, but obviously back then it was an apprenticeship, a very different, I suppose, format to the way it is set up now. But I did this the apprenticeship on 20 quid, 30 quid a week, and became a professional at Leicester. As I became a professional, I was loaned out very quickly to Rushden Diamonds, come back into the building, did very well there. Then I was loaned out to Colchester United. We ended up getting promoted the season I got there. Got to meet some fantastic people going out on loan and got a real taste for it. Went straight out again the following season to Colchester, got injured, went back to Rushden, went to Plymouth, Lincoln, and then eventually ended up signing for Rotherham United after being out on loan there as well. So I signed there and we had a fantastic 2 years straight away. Double promotion from the league, I'd say three, then, so Division Three, all the way up to the Championship. Back-to-back promotions. End up playing in the Championship against Man City. You know, people like that were in the Championship then, Sheffield Wednesday. Unbelievable teams and size of squads that you were playing against, and so many different infrastructures in regards to the tiny little club we played for, but the size of the club of, say, Portsmouth, Harry Redknapp's group that went up that season, and, you know, fantastic teams, and just a great journey for the next couple of years. And then I stayed there for 5 years. I was in and out of the side when they were in the Championship. We had some real good centre-halves in front of me. And I started going out on loan again, went to Wycombe Wanderers, Peterborough United, and then I ended up signing for Sheffield Wednesday. After being released from a contract at Rotherham and signed a two-year deal there, and that broke down pretty quick with Paul Stewart coming in after Chris Turner, the manager, left pretty sharpish. And I ended up going to sign for Oldham in the February of that season. Had a good couple of years there, 18 months there, should I say. Signed a good contract with Peterborough United to move back down south after being up north in Manchester. And had a good year there and ended up when Keith Alexander got the sack, who got the sack pretty sharpish after a new takeover. Darren Ferguson came in and said, look, you know, we're going to go young, we're going to go hungry, non-league lads. You know, I want to change direction. And he was great. We spoke, signed for Rochdale, Northampton. And then I fell into a Football League ruling where I'd had too many clubs in one season.
Yeah.
So I had to drop into the non-league. I didn't have to play non-league, but I wanted to continue playing football. And it was still only February. So I took the 14, 15 weeks left of my contract from Peterborough and signed for Kettering and played non-league football. And we got promoted that season to the conference. And I stayed another year because I really enjoyed it. Stayed another year with Kettering, played for them, and then got back in the Football League with Burton Albion. Sorry, buddy.
No, I was just going to say, you know, there's a whole host of clubs and there was a few more to add to that list. I was curious, and obviously, does it almost make you the perfect person for a loans manager role? Really understanding.
You know, there isn't much I haven't covered as a loans manager. And there isn't much I haven't covered as an ex-player who has been around the loan system.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I've done a lot of deals myself. I've been an agent. You know, I've been in recruitment. I've been head of recruitment in various roles as well. You know, I go and watch the lads. I analyse the lads. You know, I can watch them from a coach. I can watch them from a recruiter. I can watch them from a manager, football manager. I've done a host of jobs now that's given me a great understanding of this department as well.
Mm.
And what I would want as a manager, I try and put myself in the shoes for the loans. My own role now is to say, look, I would want this as a manager to see this information. Yeah. And obviously, Brendan Rodgers, the manager at Leicester City, wants it in a different format. And I present it in a different format. And there's all these different things. But I'm not a million miles away from what Brendan wants, which is great. You know, so it's great understanding for me.
Definitely. You know, just talking to that there, you know, there's a few things that you touched on that I thought, you know, I think quite interesting points. First of all, you know, that element of constantly going on loan. I mean, how does that affect one psychologically? You know, it's almost that insecurity of, am I still going to be at this club next year? What, you know, and constantly having to fight, if that makes sense.
I think the difficulty of football is that people don't understand that it should be a constant threat. You should have a fear factor. You should be driven to fight for your livelihood and your contract. And that hunger and desire and that competing element makes you better. So I didn't see it as a negative. I seen it as a positive. I didn't see the threat, you know, didn't get me down too much. I seen it as a drive, a force of momentum, a force of motivation.
Mm.
So I don't look at it as you know, oh no, I can't get out of bed. I'm overly worried about it. You know, it was, well, I've got to get out of bed. I've got to train hard. I've got to work hard. I've got to compete. I've got to stand on the line with the next man and beat him today.
Mm.
And regardless of teammate or you know, next loan player I was facing or next club I'd just gone to the following week, I've got to go in there and give my best and give who I am in that dressing room. And I think that's a big difference about not just me personally, but understanding these young lads, trying to make them compete every day from going from 18 to football that's, you know, hopefully about development to the next stage of being a football man and being a person within the industry, because the 25-year-old's going to compete with you for his shirt because he's got to pay his mortgage, but you might not have to pay your mortgage because you're a multi-million pound young footballer. But if you don't have that competitive edge, you know, that 25-year-old is going to run all over you.
Definitely. You know, you talked there, you know, you got up to about Burton Albion there, and there's a few other clubs beyond that, but you, in a roundabout way, you ended up back at Plymouth, where you had one of your previous clubs. What was that like, going back to Plymouth at the end of that career, you know, deciding that you wanted to end your career, I guess, playing-wise? what were the decisions that you started to think about then? You know, why is it that you've gone down this loan route and I guess the recruitment and more the scouting aspect of things as opposed to potentially a coaching? Is that something that's ever considered your...
Well, I've always done coaching. I did coaching 2008 when I actually went non-league, started looking at the environment I was in, seeing that I didn't want to stay in this environment for too long, but might have to stay in this environment if my career was going down the hill, you know, very fast because of the Football League ruling I fell into and the UEFA ruling. It meant that I couldn't sign for another club till the end of the season. So as much as I was getting money in, it gave me a great opportunity to start looking at other things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I set up an online recruitment business. I had an idea for an online recruitment business, which I was, you know, already starting to plan in my mind. I started looking at ways and means of earning money if I was to play part-time football. And I always wanted to be a football coach. You know, I've always wanted to be a football manager. I've never moved away from that feeling. You know, even with this loans manager role, it's, you know, it's still looking into the management side of it and the management of players. You know, that's predominantly why I wanted this role, to learn to manage young footballers and young professionals and you know, hopefully deal with millionaire footballers and have that on my CV. So this was always going to be my route because I wanted to manage people. But yeah, it took a swerve and it just hasn't took the stereotypical, you know, let's just do coaching. I'd also started in 2008 with Leicester City doing my B licence. Right. So it was, I was living in Leicester, I was playing for Kettering and I was doing the B licence, and the talent that they had in the pot of who I was dealing with on the day was ridiculous. So you're talking Harvey Barnes, who's now in the first team of Leicester City, you're talking Hamza Chowdhury, you're talking Keem Dewsbury-Hall, who's now obviously in and around the first team, Josh Knight, who played for Peterborough last season, Josh Sheppey, who plays for Belgium under-21s and in and around the first team, DJ won the World Cup with England under-20s. You know, that was my six-a-side, seven-a-sides team.
Yeah.
You know, I thought coaching was easy. You know, I'm looking at them going, I keep winning every week and I'm doing this and I'm doing that, and they're just buying into it and they're loving it.
So what you know, what would you mind just talking to that? Because that can be quite disillusioning at times, could it not? You almost, you're in a false sense of you're doing a great job, but actually sometimes you just got great players in front of you. Does that ever present a challenge for you then to then look at
yourself, of course it is.
How you're going to maybe further develop yourself?
Yeah, so I dropped different ages. I went and did, I went over to America. When I coached out in America with different sorts of kids who couldn't even kick the ball. You know, I went and learned different styles, went into schools and did after school clubs. Not just working with Leicester, I was still working with Leicester and still doing my coaching badges, but I wanted to be challenged as well. You know, I wanted to be challenged on and off the pitch. I've got that mentality anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I've got that mentality of learning and growing and you know, trying to be the best I can and constantly trying to push myself into different situations and uncomfortable situations. I think that's a big thing. Like you just said there, you know, it can be disillusioned. Yeah, it was, you know, it looked easy. It isn't easy. You know, planning and preparing and putting on a session that the lads buy into, then being challenged by the lads because certain lads think it's this and certain lads want this and certain lads want that. And then, you know, it's probably more difficult with kids than it is with pros because, you know, pros want a certain structure towards a winning a football match. You know, that's the format. That's it's the manager's format. You know, and the players buy into it or they don't buy into it. And usually if they don't buy into it, you don't win football matches because they don't buy into your ideas. All your ideas are rubbish and your players tell you that. So there's loads of different ways of looking at it.
Yeah. And yeah, just within that then, so you talked there about, you know, trying to expand on your experiences, maybe going out to America, doing after school clubs and things like that. Having been an ex-pro and now stepping into that environment, what were some of the major, you know, I could only assume that there was probably some eye-opening moments for you in those times. Was there anything that stood out for you? You think, well, what, you know what, I didn't expect this, or I wasn't prepared for this aspect of things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the knowledge of people. I was blown away by the Leicester lot who were working there at the time. Paul Cheney's, who's big influence on my coaching career. Bill Wall, who's head of recruitment, who's still head of recruitment. Paul Cheney's still there now. you know, I worked with a young guy who just retired, a real young guy called Matt Goodwin, who's lead coach now, still at Leicester. So the pillars I call them are still at Leicester from when I was there in 2008. Mm-hmm. So to see them guys and how they coached was totally different to the environment I was in. Mm. It was very much a instructing mentality. You listen, this is how it's done, to a guided and discovery mentality at Leicester. You know, let the kids find out, let the kids work it all out, let the kids get their heads around it. You put the session on and then they find their way through it. And you can dob in there a little bit and, you know, change their foot pattern and tell them to move their body better and things like that. But it wasn't an instruction. It was more of a discussion.
Yeah.
A teaching element, which I was blown away with at the time. So I implemented them into a lot of my sessions. Sure. But I also wanted to make sure that the lads knew what I wanted. Because again, it was an element of win or lose where I was working. So I had to make sure that, you know, winning mentality was still about my instruction and winning mentality was still about my coaching. You know, and I based most of my coaching on winning games, winning, you know, even tiddlywinks. You know, just anything you did in the session, anything you did with regards to the lads being around you, you wanted a winning element, you know, and make the lads compete. And that's where I think that, when I had that around me as a player, I worked hard and I trained better.
Brilliant. And I think just kind of take on your current role now then. So how did that come about? And would you mind just maybe going into a bit of detail around?
I come back to Leicester. I'd been since finishing, like you said, going working for Plymouth. I'd been doing the scouting with Plymouth. Working with the scouting element for a long period of time. So I'd come back to Leicester in 2017 after being sacked at Chesterfield as the manager, interim manager. I was head of recruitment and development, and then they asked me to be the manager. And then Leicester, literally within a couple of weeks of me being sacked, I got in contact with them just to catch up with Paul Cheney, who, like I said, had a big influence on my coaching. And he'd contacted me in regards to all the best for the manager's role at Chesterfield. I got back in contact with him and said, look, if there's any more coaching going at Leicester City, I'd jump at the chance. Mm. And within a week or so, he was back in touch, come down on a Thursday, come and have a look around. It's changed a lot, but see what you think. And I couldn't wait for the opportunity to be back. And I took the 16s job at Leicester City as the assistant, working with, again, Matt Goodwin, who changed a lot and become, you know, ultra coach and ultra professional. And we worked really well together. You know, there was conflict, but there was still very much a professional respect for him. And I think he had a professional respect for me. And I started doing all the age groups again. I started working with the 12s. So I'd gone from professional football management to working with the 12s, to working with the 14s, to working with the 16s. Every hour they could give me, I took as a part-time coach. And then, they see my recruitment background. They see my skill sets that I had in helping some of the lads who had been released and some of the lads who had had the opportunity of coming into the building on trial through my contacts. And they were really impressed. And they said, look, you know, you've brought a few players in. We've been really impressed. We want to sign them, but financial restraints, we couldn't. We ended up signing one of the players that I recommended from Chesterfield. We went ahead and signed him and he made his debut at 16. So, you know, massive plus for me. And then they said, look, you know, you've got this skill set, you've got that skill set. Do you want to come off the grass and then, you know, rarely go back on the grass with some of the 23s? Because I was coaching the 23s as well. You know, go on and off the grass from time to time and work with the lads more off the grass and coach them and mentor them.
Hmm. So just in doing that, was that something that you resistant to initially? That, you know, was coaching something that you kind of said, you know, I really enjoy the coaching aspect, and maybe stepping away from being on the grass as often is something that you maybe didn't really want to do, and you might, what was that like?
No, because I personally, I see myself as a manager and a coach.
Right.
I see myself as a manager first, manager of people.
Mm-hmm.
a coach of people. You know, so yes, as much as I wanted to stay on the grass and be by the touchline, I was having more, I would say I was having more effect with the lads, you know, around the build up, around the preparation, you know, organizing, preparing, the reflection and end of it. And I was having more buy-in from the lads as the game was going on because of the stuff I was doing before that. You know, the build-up, the preparation, the organisation, the meetings, the, you know, the through the week, because we have them a lot at Leicester. And there's a lot of time with them. You know, I'd spend a lot of time building rapport, understanding who they were, you know, just being a lad, really, just genuinely interested in them. My skill set is going into a million different dressing rooms and feeling, trying to make myself feel comfortable by building friendship groups and by building, you know, a team or by building a network of people within that club. And I've always done that. So it wasn't any different. If it was a group of 12-year-olds, I've got to deal with a group of 12-year-olds. But get them to trust me and get them to work with me and get them to want to buy into what I'm telling them because of my background.
So just on that then, what would you say are some of the things that you maybe proactively do to kind of build that trust and that rapport and, I guess, manage that situation?
I think building is, you know, always being positive, enthusiastic. Understanding the group you're with, pretty sharpish. Working out the characters, who the characters are, you know, within the group. You know, targeting certain staff to build rapport and understanding, you know, where you might fit straight away within that meeting, within that team meeting, within that group. You can't just go in there brash as anything and start, you know, babbling on to these kids because these kids going, you know, who's this jack in the box? You know, it might need that burst of energy for certain meetings or certain environments. So just really, you know, taking my time, I had the time, which was good. I had the time to reflect from my previous experiences. I've got the experience from lots of previous experiences. And, you know, I picked out nuggets from my past and brought them forward into, you know, the area and the environment I was in, and just used them to, you know, develop the lads and develop them listening to me. And, you know, and I think you get an element of respect from the kids if you're honest and upfront.
Yeah.
But not imposing. So I think, I'm 6'1", big stocky kid with big bald head. You know, I can be imposing. I've got a face like I've been chewing a wasp. So I do have to probably put a different act on.
Right.
I've got kids myself. You know, I have to take a step back with the kids that aren't mine as well. Probably double step back, you know, because they're not my kids. So you've got to teach them and treat them as little footballers. But they're kids. They want to have fun. They want to enjoy coming into training. They want people to have a smile on their faces. They want the staff to be pleasant and nice to them. They don't want to come from school and it be like school. You know, they want to come from school and
to go into a new environment where they're going to be able to enjoy themselves and have a bit of creative freedom within it.
Exactly. Just, you know, for the first 15, 20 minutes to come, let them play, get on the ball, move about. You know, time restraints aren't that important. They're here anyway. You know, let them rock up, but like give them 15 minutes just to get the crap out of their minds of you know, science. And when I say crap, you know, the stuff that they've been churning over their heads, and get the stuff and just go and play and be free and relax. And that's something that took me a long time to get my head around, because I was so used to like time restraints, you know, respect, elements of working life rather than, you know, child football.
And I think just, you know, within that then, having that experience of obviously being in your own career, having been out on loan to many different clubs, would you say that's had a massive benefit to you now in this particular role, and I guess in building those relationships and creating that?
Yeah, the working with the 12 and 14s and the 16s gave me a great eye-opener to the difficulties that can manifest with these kids you know, the pressure they're under, the amount of work that it takes to be a footballer. You know, I was very lucky. I was physically very good as a player. I was mentally very strong from the ups and downs I had in my life. And I was able to just, you know, blank people out when they're on me too much and, you know, take people's nuggets of information and work for me. So they're the kind of things I try and implement into the problems or the I don't call them negatives, you know, bumps in the road or things that happen within the lad's career. You know, there's loads of opportunities for these lads to come back and bite a football club in the arse if it's not working out for them. So don't take one problem or one, you know, so-called negative and hold it too long within your head. You know, it's gone now. Look, move on. You know, it's like another football match next week. Anyway, you can change it. It's a great situation to be a footballer because you've got another opportunity to right a wrong from last week and put it right the next week. And you can do that within the training session. And you can do that within the first session. If you had a bad first session, you can put it right in the second session. And these are the little things I used to try and like teach the kids. Like, you don't need to be under pressure here. This isn't a place where you should feel under pressure.
Definitely.
You know, this is the place where you should go out and enjoy yourself. And even if I'm saying to you, look, get this right, get that, I'm going to pull you straight after. And I'm going to say, look, you know, that's me. This is how I am as a coach. You know, and let's work together with that. But you know I've got your back. You know I'm there for you. You know I'm there for you as a loans manager or a coach or a manager. You know, inevitably, I can have my little shouting match on my own. You don't have to listen to me. But you know I'm going to pull you afterwards and go, listen, I'm making a point there because of this. I'm making a point there because of that. And, you know, I hope you listen to me because I'm trying to make you better. Simple as that.
Definitely.
I'm trying to make you a better person, a better man, a better kid, a better player. And then we're all progressing then.
Yeah, no, what I'm hearing is not too dissimilar to the way I approach it, in that the players need to understand that you're there for their best interest. Even if there's things that's going to put them in uncomfortable situations at times or things that they don't particularly like, it's you're doing it with a good intention. The end goal is to try and help them develop in whichever way that may be. Just, you know, I want to take you back a few minutes that you talked there about, you know, trying to pick up some golden nuggets within your own journey. I'm just curious as to know whether you've had any, or if there's been any particular situations or individuals in particular where they've been a major influence in you, and maybe what the biggest golden nugget is that you've taken away from those situations.
As a kid, we used to have a real negative coach at the football club called Ken McDonald. Worked in and around football for many years, and I really struggled with him. As a player, as a kid, you know, hated it going in to Leicester. You know, killed my confidence, killed my bubbliness mentality, and I had a stepdad similar. You know, killed my confidence, killed my mentality, made me feel very negative about my ability. But as I got older, it was quite funny actually. As I got older, I didn't give a care what they said. You know, I didn't care because I had this like shining light in my head that, you know what? What they're telling me, I'm going to take all that negativity and just take it off them by being better than them, what they're thinking, by improving.
Where did that shift of the mindset come from, though? And how did that come about? Because obviously, if those are the influences that you've got there, was it something that you'd seen? Was it, you know, what was that like?
I seen a negative stance from them, being constantly negative towards me as a player, even as a kid. And I went and worked at it. I went and took myself away, pumped balls against the wall, went after training and trained again. Got fitter, got stronger, worked harder off the pitch than most kids did. You know, physically I was good, but I weren't professionally good. I was a baby, you know. Physically I was already set with my DNA, but there was so much more I could give myself by being fitter. by being stronger. And I struggled, you know, mentally with a lot of the running and the incredibly hard work it was to do these sessions, because they were mental, some of them. back then they were mental, you know, run for 10 miles and then run again, sprint here, sprint there, sprint here, sprint there, all day sprinting. You know, some of the stuff we used to do was nuts. And I look back and go, how did I get through that?
Yeah.
How did I do that? And like you said, where was the shift? The shift was probably hearing my own voice inside and trusting myself. You know, and waking up to who I was as a person, not who they were telling me I was.
Yeah.
And I think that comes from, you know, just being you, being your DNA, how it's your set. And I was just resilient. You know, I was lucky enough to have...
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A resilience about me that just kept going, and even if this was going wrong, I'll work through it, I'll get through it. And them sorts of negative people kind of drive me to go forward all the time, because I looked at them and went, you know, you can't get me. At the time when I was 14, I didn't see it like that, but when I got older, I was like, you know, you just can't break me, you can try. And it helped me in so many opportunities, and helped me in so many ways going through my career with silly managers who, you know, make you train on your own or try and treat you like, you know, and try and treat you badly. And, you know, they couldn't break me down. They couldn't break me down. They couldn't work out how to break me down. They tried all sorts of things and they couldn't break me down.
Just on that then, you know, what was it that you, I guess... How were you managing that for yourself emotionally and mentally, in the sense that would help you keep yourself motivated and driven and almost be able to deflect any of this negativity consistently? Because I can only imagine that in a situation like that, for many people, that consistent negative or that consistent, you know, that element of the people are getting at you, they're mistreating you, or they're treating you badly, or
yeah, let's just be careful of saying mistreated, or,
yeah,
or, you know, I don't, I wasn't being mistreated,
yeah, well,
you know, I'm at a football club,
made you feel treated unfairly potentially.
I don't even know if we can use them words, if I'm honest.
Sure.
I just, in regards to the way I look at it now, okay, so I was at a football club and that coach there was making a genuine, it's weird to say, but he was making a genuine reason for isolating me in a training session. Mm. And his genuine reason was the way he was taught was the way you make these players better. That was the way he was taught how to manage kids and this, that, and the other. That was back in the day. You know, this is how it was then. Okay. So he used to look at me and go, you got all this physicality, you got all this sheer bruteness, or whatever you want to call it at the time, but you got to get better feet. And he didn't know any other way to make a player better than the way he was acting at that time.
Mm.
And it killed more kids than it produced, trust me. It ruined more kids than it made players. But as much as you're asking me as an influence, it was an influence on my mentality. It was an influence on my ability. You know, and a lesser resilient person would have failed, would have not been able to cope. I could. So going back to the original question, you're looking at a mentality of mistreating. I wasn't mistreated. I was coached in a way he was probably brought up in, thinking that that's how, what he wants to implement, and they're the best ways to produce top players.
Sure.
So I personally don't think that is the way to coach players in a grand scheme of things. So then, but again, that's my opinion. But
so just talking about that, then would you mind just going into a bit of detail around what you would describe as maybe the fundamentals to your own coaching philosophy?
It depends what age group you're dealing with. For me, I would coach players in a safe environment always. I think a safe working environment, because I want to work with professionals, and I would have an understanding with these guys that they feel wanted and also understood as individuals.
Mm.
I'd base my coaching and coaching philosophy around the players to give them an understanding that they have a lot to say within their wants and needs within the environment they're in.
Mm.
And I would also understand that, you know, I've got to step in there as the leader and as the manager to guide these players who are less experienced in the way where we all want to go, because I'll be able to pick pieces from all their ideas and put it together. Inevitably, you can have a plan. But I love the Mike Tyson saying of, you know, you walk in a boxing ring and you have a plan until someone punches you in the face. You know, there's so many different aspects of coaching that can go wrong, and there's so many different aspects of coaching that can go right. To go and nail down a philosophy within a professional environment is very difficult, because there's so many different things that can go right and wrong against you at any given time. My ideas of styles of play are a comfortable style of play, but be effective with it. Go and play football, but be effective with it. You know, turnover of the ball in certain areas, in certain times of the game is very important. But make sure that, you know, you're doing it for all the right reasons. And inevitably, it's about scoring goals. Go and create chances. Go and get shots off at the goal. Go and make sure that the lads know that. Use set pieces. Use people's skill sets within the building to make sure that you're then creating opportunities from the skill sets that you've got. You know, unfortunately, like I said, if you're walking into an environment where you've got a bunch of players that maybe can't play out the back, there's going to be a time and a period of time when that's going to implement a slow process to get that philosophy across. You know, inevitably, you can't always do that. So you've got to make change and again, be versatile and have that vulnerability about you to be aware of that very quickly. Definitely. You know, you can't sit there and say to them, you know, and expect them to do things that these kids don't want to do, these players don't want to do. And it's, again, learning from the players that you have in the building. I've had player meeting after player meeting after player meeting. I can't remember many managers asking me my opinion when they walked in the door of what I'm about as a player. And I would have bought into a lot more managers if they did that to me. You know, I always got told what the manager tells me what he was going to do at this football club. I don't see how a manager can tell me what he's going to do at a football club when there's 30 members of staff or 30 players in the building that might not like this bloke as soon as he walks in. You know?
Mm.
And the modern coaches, the modern better coaches out there, understand who's in the building before they start dictating.
Just on that then, you know, you talk there about some of the, I guess, almost that doing that pre-assessment before making any decisions. And within that, it's probably been, you know, within your both playing and career and obviously now working at within the EPPP academies, and you probably observed many coaches work. And I'm just interested to know, maybe what some of your pet hates are when it comes to coaching, in terms of the consistent behaviour that you see and you think, do you know what, that really grates me, or, you know, I really don't agree with that. Do you ever have any of those moments there?
Yeah, again, a lot of the, as much as you've got to do it for the EPPP and the planning and reflection and things like that, there's a lot of actual good quality paperwork going on. But it looks very different from when the lads turn up from their different environments they've been in. So we'd sit and plan and prepare and get organised within a session that we try and implement into it. And, you know, some days the kids just wouldn't buy into it. So I think that as much as we want to plan, prepare, reflect, have all these newfangled ideas, you know, follow the wave of the next great coach or the next bloke, you know, making out like he's doing this and the next country's ideas implemented into our system. I think we've got to be true to who we are as well. And that's what I'm saying about understanding who you've got in the building first. So as much as academies want to change with the times, I think you've also got to have an identity of who you are as an academy and stick to it and be around it and change slowly towards different things as you go along. But, you know, I think that we can be too quick to change our ideas because of someone coming up with a new idea and you know, getting a bit carried away with a new country's ideas and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So they're my pet hates, you know. Not a lot of people are confident in themselves to stick with their own ideas.
So then, you know, just to build on that, then, I agree with you. I think this, you know, there's a lot of new trends and concepts that come out and people just kind of jump on the bandwagon without maybe potentially doing enough research into these new ideas and ways of working or these different ways of working, and not staying consistent and having that longevity of the work that they already believe in, if that makes sense.
Even with that, you've got to be very, very, again, very careful of one experience for 15 years is still only one experience. And I don't see where then these people who have had that one experience for 15 years can then challenge the people who have had 6 or 7 experiences within them 15 years. You know, you've got to be very careful of you know, I would say the people that have these experiences, you've got to respect their ideas as well. And don't get me wrong, you know, change is great. You know, I look at my career, constantly changing, but there's also an element where you've got to stay put for a bit and just keep learning. And if you're in that environment, it's fantastic. And me now, I'm in no rush to leave Leicester City. I'm learning every day. I'm, you know, picking up nuggets of information every day from the pillars in the community, the pillars of the football club. But like the pillars at the football club are constantly learning and constantly growing and constantly like striving for new information. And yes, they're following and looking at new trends, but they're not particularly taking every little bit from it and changing as soon as the new wave comes in.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of these young coaches, young coaches, you know, 22, 23, 24s, are reading from the so-called pep books and they're reading from the newfound college courses and they're reading, and they think the game's that slow.
Yeah.
But the better coaches, the better people like the Brendans and the Peps and all these different so-called managers and coaches, their minds are working at an unbelievable pace. And it's not about the little bits. It's about being able to produce that information at that pace and then coming out with the right decisions. And that's where I think that, you know, we can get a bit over, I would say over exuberant about one trend. When there's loads of them, and yeah, go and look at them, but you know, take little bits and become yourself and try and be yourself rather than trying to be Pep and trying to be Brendan and trying to be, you know, all these different managers and all these different people. Be yourself.
No, definitely. And I totally agree. I mean, I say to coaches all the time, there's no point looking at the coach down the road and trying to be that coach. At the end of the day, that coach has done certain things with his players because of certain reasons, whether that be the needs of his players are different or whatever that might look like. You've got to, you know, step away from the idea of I'm just going to take that session and go and do it with my players and hope that it's going to work exactly as it did for that person there. And it comes back to what you were saying a few moments ago. A new manager comes in, how can they start making decisions without assessing what's actually happening in the environment, the people in the environment? You've got, like you said, you might sometimes have a squad of 25 to 30 players. You need to know who the characters are in the group before you start making decisions about what you want to do. You can have an idea of where you want it to go, however, but ultimately, is it going to work for the people in that environment in that given moment? So, you know, speaks earlier to when you mentioned about the philosophy aspect. You can have a philosophy, but there's so many intricacies and variables that you have to kind of be aware of that could affect the outcome of that philosophy in that given environment. So just to kind of build on that then, how would you say that someone who's going into this environment now, going into coaching and maybe looking at some of the skill sets that they can offer. So you touched on earlier that your skill set for recruitment and scouting and I guess talent identification was recognized by the club. How important is it, and if you don't mind just speaking to how important it is just to maybe identify what maybe you're strong at and really trying to maybe build your platform around that, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think the difficulty in getting into the environment, football environment anyway, is ridiculously tough. You know, I like to think I've worked incredibly hard, you know, to get where I'm at. You know, I've had to have the experiences. I've had to live in hotels on my own. I've had to do this. I've had to do that. You know, I've had to be put myself in uncomfortable situations by working and by grafting and by doing all the things I've done to keep, you know, the house over my head. You know, this wasn't given to me. This is me doing this. You know, and that's where I think people have to understand that there's so many nights where like my head is racked because I'm like thinking to myself, when am I gonna get a stroke of luck here? And even me, I'm, you know, people are going, oh, you know, you're working in the Premier League, you know, you're doing this, you're, yeah, but like there's been times where I'm like, am I going to get a break? Am I going to get a break where I actually just get where I want to get where I want to be? And there was times when I was like that, you know, don't get me wrong, but I think that's where these young coaches got to understand that this journey's long. It's a long process. It's a long journey. I started in 2008, and it's took me a long time to get where I'm at, and I still want to get higher. You know, and so it's going to take me even longer. The process is long, so just take your time. Enjoy the process. Enjoy the journey. Work with enthusiasm, which is always a big positive for me. Work I would say an energy level of, you know, produce good quality, good driven data or whatever you want to produce for the football club. But enjoy doing whatever it is you're given an opportunity to do. You know, if you want to work in football, expect some real horrible, ugly jobs to do. And that's the best thing I can ever say to somebody. No, it ain't always going to be a good day in football. But when you get a good day in football, it's worth 100 of the bad days. And I've been lucky enough to have some really, really unbelievable days and weeks and patches of football where I've just gone, do you know what, I'm flying here. And I've had patches like that since I've been a staff member, you know, since I've finished. So I know there's light at the end of the tunnel. You just got to keep going. There's so many difficulties out there in life in general. You're in professional football. Just enjoy it.
Definitely.
You know, you're a professional in football and you're getting paid to coach. You're getting paid to work as a coach. It's damn sight easier than digging the roads.
So, you know, just to kind of come back to your journey a little bit then, if you had to look back at your journey, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges that you faced in, you know, might be something you're still dealing with now, and if you have been able to deal with it, you know, how did you go about dealing with that?
I think one of the biggest things that I question, I've always questioned it, is the difficulty, as much as people might see who haven't played the game, the shift now between the negativity towards the ex-player. With very typecasted, scripted comments about, you know, oh, you played, just talk about your playing experiences. Yeah, but I've also, you know, personally gone away and studied and you know, done my a lot of courses on mentoring and coaching and teaching, and you know, gone away and, you know, spent a lot of my own money on educating myself what I would implement into certain situations in business and finance and event management, and you know, trying to take nuggets of information from various different stuff that I've done to be a better person, to be a better human being. And I still see that there's a negativity, slight negativity towards the ex-player when he wants to become a coach or wants to become a mentor, because the people see it as like, you know, it's easy for you. Well, no, it's not easy for me. You know, I get ignored when I was an ex-player looking for a job. I get ignored by the next man does in regards to applying for a job and not getting replies. You know, I get ignored like everybody does. You know, I look at the so-called Premier League lads getting opportunities toward before I did. You know, I have my own questions on why the process is difficult to get a job after football. You know, why is it so difficult? Because, you know, there's all these different things happening within a football club. Now I've worked with football clubs, I understand processes. You know, can it be a better process for the ex-footballer or the staff to get a job at a football club? Yeah, of course it can. But it's also, you know, there's a lot of people applying. There's a lot of people of wanting these jobs because they are great jobs. So you're joining an unbelievable amount of people all rushing to get this job. So your name's got to be good. It's got to be consistent. It's got to have a good degree. It's got to have a good education background. And people have got to understand who you are, you know, and how you get yourself across on a piece of paper isn't always the best thing to get these jobs. And unfortunately, that's the process still. So the difficulty is there's still negativities around football and you know, management of recruitment and how it's looked at within an environment where I came from. And it's amazing when some of these so-called non-background coaches get in the game and you know, complain it's difficult. Well, yeah, it's difficult for us all. But, you know, it's an environment where you want to be in, and it tastes better when you're successful in an environment that's difficult to get to because you've succeeded. So, you know, enjoy the experience as well.
Definitely. As you always talk there about, you know, your experiences and your playing experience now as a coach and then moving into, I guess, this loans manager role. If you could turn back time now to the back end of your playing career, or when you first started getting into coaching now, and, you know, speak to Guy Branston of then, knowing what you know now, what would be one message you'd like to tell, give yourself?
I would say take a bit more time on reflection. Take a bit more time on working out what it looks like to the kids, to the players, and make it more player friendly, not coach friendly. You know, make it more based around the players. And I would have told myself that. I would have said, do you know what? Don't worry too much about what your ideas are on it, but make more focus on the players' ideas and what they're going to take out of it. And that's probably what I've learned over the last 5 or 6 years, that, you know, you're implementing and putting processes in place to impress players and also guide players forward into making them better. And that takes a lot of detail and a lot of sitting down and working out what the session's going to be. And I didn't do that when I first started. I thought I knew it. I thought I understood it. I thought I'd seen 1,000 sessions, which I had. And I thought I could just come up with a session that the kids will enjoy. And as I got into it more, working with better players, they need more. You know, that's the difficulty that these coaches who want to be good coaches have got to understand. You've got to be able to come up with ideas off an impulse or off a split second, or your session's going to be dead. And these are where the top coaches excel because of the environments they've come from the past and the experiences they've got. They can just pull up a session, and if it's dead, they've got to pull up another one with a similar theme, with a similar intensity, with a similar drive for the next split second, because someone or somebody or something has gone wrong in that session. They've got to change it, And it's the same as when the game time's on, or they're playing on a Sunday and they're managing, or they're working on a Saturday and it's going wrong for them, or it's going right. You know, they've got to be able to split second change that environment. And like I said, my own personal view would be learn more about the players, get some ideas from them afterwards, so reflection, and take my time on digesting that and learning from that. And I think I probably would have been even more of a better coach and a better understander of people, you know, 6 years on, 7 years on.
So, you know, just now, coming back to yourself a bit now in your current day, you said you know, you're enjoying your current role at Leicester, and you're always picking up the golden nuggets on a daily basis. But what's next for Guy Branston?
I'm going to stay here for as long as I can. I see it as a football club that's embraced me and I've embraced it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully build stronger relationships with the pillars, which I've got good relationships with the pillars at the football club, and keep doing this role at the minute. You know, I don't see me envisioning moving away too quickly. You know, I'd love to an opportunity of learning this role and then learning another role within the industry and within the football club. You know, the football club's fantastic, and it's the club that I've been brought up with and know a lot about. And I think that you've got to have people like that within the place to push the philosophies and the ideas of what the DNA looks like and what the club wants on a daily basis. And I think that, you know, if I could become a person of that stature at Leicester City Football Club, I'd be incredibly proud of my career.
So just as we start to wind down now, then, if you had 60 seconds now to leave our listeners with one golden nugget and maybe take forward and potentially apply with them for their own journeys, what would that be?
I would bring it back to what I said earlier. The process of coaching is a long process. Some of these young lads and young ladies are coming into it at 21, 22, you know, be licensed. You know, it's a long process of learning. So enjoy that process. You know, if you don't want to enjoy that process, it's going to be very difficult to get where you want to get. So follow something you really enjoy. Follow something that gets you up in the morning. You know, follow something that really drives you every day. Or do something different. You know, don't look at this as an easy industry. Grow in this industry and understand there's going to be so many difficulties. But I think the difficulties get massively overshadowed by the successes. If you become successful, if you hit your KPIs, if you hit all your positives and your negatives, I think that you'll have a great, great career if you do that.
Brilliant. And just on a final note then, when your career, you know, when your coaching career or your, you know, your time in recruitment does come to an end, you know, what, how would you want to be remembered by the people that you've worked with and for?
I think, listen, if people remember who you are, it's a positive anyway. You know, regardless of what they said about you, you know, I think if people really genuinely remember you and you know, you want to be remembered for obviously the real good things you did for them. You know, I forgot a lot of negative people in my life, but I've remembered a lot of the good ones. And I think that the good ones bring you pleasure, bring you motivation, drive you forward, you know, and positive influences. You know, I don't want to be around negative people. So, you know, I find sources of energy. And I think if anyone can say that about me, I'll be very happy with that. And I think I'm a positive source. You know, I'm very honest and open. And I like to build rapport with people anyway.
Mm. Yeah, brilliant. Look, Guy, I just want to say thank you very much for your time today. And it's been a very insightful conversation, certainly for me, and I'm sure it will be for our listeners. And just on a final note, you know, if any of the listeners wanted to get in touch with you or had any questions off the back of this, is there any way they can on maybe social media at all?
Yeah, hit me up on Twitter, which is Brano, Brano 1979. I'm on LinkedIn as obviously Guy Branston. And I'm more than welcome to ask any further questions regarding coaching and mentoring and the environment that, you know, hopefully you guys or girls will be going into and hopefully excelling in.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another edition of the Coaches Network Insight Series, where we sit down with experienced individuals across the multiple disciplines within the coaching world, hoping to explore their journeys and key insights in order to package away some golden nuggets that you can apply to help you reach your full potential. I've no doubt that you've enjoyed today's episode as much as we have, but I just want to say thanks again for tuning in. The support is much appreciated. Please do get in touch with us and today's guests. Let us know where you're listening from to share your thoughts, views and key takeaways from today's show, along with any suggestions you may have for guests or future topics on the show that you'd like to hear discussed. Ultimately, guys, the show is about yourselves. The content is for you, and we just want to continue to create that great content. On that note, get in touch with us on Instagram at The Coaches Network and on Twitter at The Coaches Net. And if you want to touch base with Coach Ben, he's available on Instagram and Twitter at FocusBXN. Lastly, guys, keep an eye on our socials for the latest updates and announcements for upcoming guests and discussion topics with the panel. And until next time, guys, take care.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.